Welcome to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast, where you hear from current and former Sacred Heart student athletes and coaches. Here's your host, Dan Gardella.
What's up and welcome back to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast. My name is Dan Gardella. So happy to have you guys tuning in for another episode. Episode one was a real treat for me. We got to talk to head coach of the football team, Mark Nofri, and it was a great interview. Like I said in the first episode, he is so passionate about not only coaching football, but coaching and having a relationship with these kids and watching the university grow into what it's become now. And that's what happens when you've been a part of the university since 1994. But thank you to everybody who reached out and gave feedback, comments, everything. Like I said in episode one, I want this to be a real conversation between myself and the people who do listen, because I want the listeners to get as much out of it as I am. I know for me, it's such a thrill to be able to talk to all these people and get to learn more about them and their journey through SHU and even what they have done past SHU. And this episode will certainly do that. EJ Anasicki joined me to talk about everything from his recruitment story to getting a Sacred Heart to working to become the player that he is now and even looking toward the future, what he's going to be doing at Tennessee this upcoming season as a grad transfer for the Volunteers. But before we even get to that, we do need to talk a little bit about the sports landscape, specifically the college sports landscape that's been going on right now. I'm recording this on September 12th. It's a Saturday. It's college football is finally back. Not as many games as we're used to, but nevertheless, there is college football on my television screen. And I can't tell you how happy I was to be able to flip on ESPN and Fox and watch some of these college football games today. I know earlier today I was watching Louisiana Lafayette and Iowa State. As the Raging Cajuns upset the number 23 team in the country to start the season. I know I was flipping back and forth with a couple other games, but like I said, it's just to have college sports on my TV screen in any capacity was really encouraging and fun for me to see, because as a college student, college sports are what at least I look forward to when I first got to college. I wanted to be at the football games and the basketball games and any sports possible. So now that through all that we've been through more than 6 months without college sports, because right around this time in, 6 months ago in March, in the middle of March was when everything was getting shut down and we were about to enter this uncharted territory of no sports for the foreseeable future, let alone no college sports for the foreseeable future. So to finally see it back in some capacity was great for me, especially. For college basketball, this is a big week coming up. September 16th, the NCAA will announce their plans for what the college basketball season may look like. They may come out with a decision. They may delay the decision. We don't know what their ruling is going to be on the 16th. I know the biggest storyline over the past couple weeks has been when the college basketball season will start, which has been, there have been four particular dates pretty much each week, pushing it back a week or starting on their normal date, which was November 10th, or continuing to push it back week after week. And the latest they said that they would start, at least in the proposed dates, was December 4th. Now, I know right around the Thanksgiving break is really where a lot of people have decided that would be the best place to start college basketball, just because a lot of the college students will be home for their Christmas break, because I know Sacred Heart's doing it as well as many other colleges across the country. They are having their students go home after or for the Thanksgiving break and not returning until the end of Christmas break, which usually is the middle of January. So that would be the golden opportunity for college basketball to have college games on campuses, especially for the mid-majors who cannot afford to bubble like a Northeast Conference and all the other mid-majors that go on throughout college basketball. But that would be probably giving you a month and a half to get any non-conference games in, whether in-state, whatever the regulations would be at that time. But that would be the best opportunity. On the other hand, there are preseason tournaments that are usually played around Feast Week that obviously they're not going to be traveling all across the country to go to these tournaments. So the conversation of bubbles and what to do with these bubbles and where these bubbles will be have certainly picked up some traction over the past couple of weeks. I know Mohegan Sun up in Uncasville, Connecticut has emerged as one of the top landing spots for a potential bubble where a bunch of Power 5 teams and other high-end mid-majors would go and play these preseason tournaments at this one location, be there for however long it would take, and then go back to their respective campuses and universities to go and continue what may be a continuation of non-conference play or just kind of gearing up for the conference slate. I know for Sacred Heart and the Northeast Conference, bubbling is very unrealistic because it's more of a financial thing. I don't think schools in these mid-majors have enough money to put these athletes in a bubble for a couple weeks or however long these bubbles will be and then continue to play college basketball throughout. My initial guess and reaction, and I could be very wrong on this, I have no knowledge or reports or anything like that, but I think what the Northeast Conference and what mid-majors will do is probably just wait until the calendar turns to 2021, wait until conference play would usually begin on a regular year, and maybe extend conference play out to 25 games or something along those lines. Because I know the question is there's still a number of games or a minimum number of games that needed to be played by a particular program in order for them to even qualify for the NCAA tournament. And if there is no non-conference play for these mid-major teams, you would think that they would extend conference play to a point where they would hit the minimum threshold for games played in order to compete for an NCAA tournament, which is another thing that I will bring up is that there is, you know, and the NCAA is really driven to having an NCAA tournament this year, and they are trying their hardest to plan and see if they can do it, which ideally I think they will. I don't think, and I've been saying this to people that I've talked about it with, there is no way college basketball and the NCAA can financially afford to not have an NCAA tournament in back-to-back seasons. So I think they are miles ahead of that. They're already game planning for March when the NCAA tournament would be, but we're going to have to see what their official ruling is on the 16th. They very well could push their decision back even more, but the 16th is when we're going to get the first step of hopefully more direction as to when the college basketball season will start and what exactly it will look like. Anyway, moving on to our interview subject for today. This was another treat. I got to talk to EJ Anasicki, who I had become very close with over the course of certainly my time and his time at Sacred Heart. He did so much since he came to Sacred Heart in the fall of 2017. We came in the same year, and I got to watch him progress from a role player to the most improved player in the conference his sophomore year to an all-NEC first-team candidate and a possible player of the year this past season. I mean, I saw in... when I watched him play, there was no question that he was the hardest working player on the court. I would see him in practice and how hard he would work. And he was just a student of the game and always found ways to get better, which at times you didn't think was really possible given how he played and what his strengths were. His junior year, it was remarkable. Averaged a double-double, was near the top of the country in offensive rebounds per game, and led Sacred Heart to one of the best, if not the best, season in the program's history, winning 20 games, which broke the Division I record for wins in a season. They won a game in the Northeast Conference Tournament for the first time in 11 years, and they would have had a postseason appearance for the first time in their Division I history, but obviously with COVID and everything, things got wiped out. But it still would have happened, and it still doesn't take away from how great of a season they had this past season, and Anasicki was the front runner of that. He was one of the leaders. He was one of the go-to guys. And after the season, he made the decision to enter the transfer portal as a grad transfer. And I mean, when you put up numbers like that, you're going to get a lot of looks from high programs. And the list that he had, and we talk about it more in the interview, we talk about that recruitment process, but, you know, Gonzaga, Louisville, Tennessee, Georgetown, Boston College, there are even more schools on there that wanted Anasicki to go and play for them. But ultimately, he decided to go to Tennessee, which has a bit of a family connection. And you know, when your sister plays for Pat Summit, wins two national championships there, it kind of makes it feel a little bit more like home now that you had a sister that went through the same university and the same program, essentially, down in Knoxville. So I got to talk to him a lot bit about that, what to expect this upcoming year, as well as, like I said, going back to his career at Sacred Heart. But, you know, he comes from a great family. His older brother led the NCAA in rebounding twice when he was at Siena. He now plays overseas. I talked about his sister. But now this is his journey that he's going to get to write this year for the Volunteers coming up for the 2020-2021 season. So without further ado, my interview with EJ Anasicki. Joining me on the podcast is a really great friend of mine and just a beast on the basketball court. He graduated in 3 years at Sacred Heart with a degree in finance. And he also casually scored over 1,000 points and grabbed over 750 rebounds at Sacred Heart. It's EJ Anasicki. EJ, it's good to see you, my man. How are things in Knoxville right now?
Thanks for having me. It's great seeing you too, Dan. Everything's going well. We're working hard as a team, trying to stay safe with everything that's going on with this pandemic. Just hopefully this all ends really soon and we go back to being normal. But I'm making the most out of it and I'm having fun.
Well, let's just start with that. You go from Sacred Heart to Tennessee for basketball. How eye-opening was it when you first started going through workouts and practicing with the team? How much different was it from Fairfield to Tennessee?
It was a little different, the way things, like, moving up a level. But at the end of the day, it's all basketball. So, like, in basketball, you always adapt and adjust and get used to it. But I definitely enjoy being here and practicing with those guys. It's very good competing. Like, we really compete against each other really hard, and that's the best thing about it.
I mean, last season for you, almost 16 points a game, 11.5 rebounds, which was sixth in the country. You had averaged just over four offensive rebounds a game, which was fourth in the country. For people who have seen you, and obviously I was one of them that saw a lot of your games, where do you get that tenacious mindset from?
It's really the will to win. Like, I just want to win so bad and do whatever my team needs me to do. And that's kind of like how I've always been. I was even watching some old games of myself when I was 16. And I was like, sheesh, I still play the same way. Like, just play with effort and just play with hunger, just trying to win.
And you were such a huge part of last season's team, a team that broke the Division I record for wins in the season with 20. What made last season's team at Sacred Heart so good?
I would say for last year's team, going into it, we all got really close. My sophomore year, we had a lot of freshmen, so it was a learning curve, including myself. We're all underclassmen. It was our first year, really. All of us really playing in a rotation. So us coming in from my junior year and those guys sophomore year and Jarrell, Kennan, all those guys, we just all came together because we had one goal and we wanted to try and win a championship for those guys, those two are seniors, and we wanted them to experience what we're going to experience.
And while, I mean, unfortunately, you guys didn't win the NEC championship, but you won a game in the NEC tournament for the first time in 11 years. It was a thrilling game against Mount St. Mary's. I want to go to, obviously, the highlight of that game, your putback dunk against Mount St. Mary's. You came out of nowhere, grabbed it with one hand, and dunked it. You were way too humble when I asked you about it right then. So now we can be more honest. What was going through your mind when you saw Ball is Life and overtime start sharing your dunk around, and how much was your phone blowing up after that moment?
My phone was blowing up. A lot of people started calling me. At first, I didn't know like it was that big. Like I didn't until like after the fact. I didn't think I really did something spectacular with the dunk. Until like after the fact, and I saw the video after the game, I was like, sheesh. But it was a really cool experience being number one player on ESPN. I definitely want to experience that again. But yeah, I love it. That guy, do it again.
Was the dunk difficult to you? Did you feel like you had to pull off a strange like contortion of your body, or was it just natural? Because the way it looked so natural when you grabbed you. You just grabbed it with one hand, tucked it under your arm, and then just threw it back down in one motion.
Yeah, to be honest, it just felt natural. I didn't think much of it, but I'm going to be honest. The play started with Jarrell because Jarrell crashed with a rebound, and two people went to box him out, and then he just forgot about me. And I just saw a clear lane, and I just went after it.
So you mentioned Jarrell, and I know you talked about this right after the win against Mount St. Mary's. You two called each other the cleanup crew.
Yeah, we're the cleanup crew.
Where did that originate? When did you guys start calling yourselves that?
The summer before junior year, we're playing in Nike Pro City in New York City with NBA guys. So you know like how it is playing with like NBA guys. Like they're shooting all the shots. So if you really want to score, you're gonna have to get the hustle points, like get offensive rebounds. And that was our mindset, like, when we practiced with them, like, we just, it was like, we're going to clean up everything. And then we became Captains of the Cleanup Crew. We brought that back to Sacred Heart. And then since then, everyone wanted to be a part of it. You see KO, he's trying to get some offensive rebounds. Zach Baffenberger, all those guys. So we just embraced it, being the Cleanup Crew, the guys that do the dirty work.
How valuable was playing in that Nike Summit kind of thing? I know I'd seen that you were playing with some NBAs. I think Lance Stevenson was there and Emeka Okafor you played with. How valuable was it to play with guys who have played at the highest level?
I would definitely say for me and Jarrell, it was really good for the past two summers playing at that level, because it showed us like what we needed to do, like what it takes to get to that level, how far we are, where we fit in amongst those guys. And it made us come back to Sacred Heart with that extra confidence, the extra boost, like we competed with those guys. We got to come back here and take care of business. Like, no one should be able to stop us. And we just got to keep working until we get to that level. So it was like a goal for us every summer to go down there and then to put in the work.
Let's go to before you even got to SHU. What originally drew you to the university when you were going through your initial recruitment?
Coach Latina recruited me hard. Definitely came at St. Thomas More. I went to St. Thomas More prep school. Came to every open gym. He recruited me harder than every other coach, I'll say. And he showed that he really wanted me. And for me, I was always my prep school coach, Jerry Quinn, he said, go to the school where your head coach loves you the most. So that's where it made my decision to Sacred Heart. We already had St. Thomas More alumni there, Sean Hohen, he's from New Jersey, Zach Rides, which he gave my tour at St. Thomas More. So it just made it that much easier for the decision and not being as close to home.
Yeah, St. Thomas More is certainly a pipeline for Sacred Heart over the past couple of years. But you come into SHU, and your freshman year, you're behind Davon Barnett and Mario Matasevich, who, and along with Joe Lopez, and there was a lot of traffic at the forward position. Did it give you a new perspective, or what did you kind of learn from having to go in every day knowing that minutes aren't going to be guaranteed for you?
All right. I'm going to be honest. Coming in the freshman year, I just came with the mindset I'm going to just work, and try to outwork everybody to earn me a spot. Like, I told myself coming in, I was like, those guys, the seniors, they're ahead of me, but that's not going to stop me from working hard, and I'm going to earn playing time. So, like, I lived in the gym my freshman year, like, faithfully. Those guys will tell you that some nights I slept at the gym. Like, I was faithfully in the gym that whole year because I was, like, trying to prove a point and prove to myself that I was just as good as those guys, that I could play. And, well, the dice didn't roll in my favor, but at that year, but it definitely was added motivation the next year because I told myself that I'm going to just show everybody that I'm a good player, that I could really play at this level.
So you slept in the Pitt Center.
Joe Lopez would vouch for this one. We had practice. We had individuals. At that time, you couldn't have practice over the summer. So you had individuals, and we had to make 10,000 shots for the summer. I convinced myself that I'm gonna make 20,000 by the end of the summer session. So I'll just come in there like around like 11 p.m. when no one's there, just shoot, just keep shooting. And we'll have like lifts and conditioning at 5, 6 a.m. in the morning with Coach Adams. So instead of me walking back to the dorms, I'll just go downstairs, shower, and just go to sleep.
Where would you sleep? What, like, was there a couch or like?
In the locker room couch.
Okay.
And this is before they renovated it. So it wasn't the couch that we had now.
Was it comfortable? Like, did you actually feel like you got like a good night rest?
I mean, it was good enough. It got me here. So it was a good, funny story to tell.
That is funny. It perfectly captures what you're all about in terms of your work ethic. And Anthony Latina had said it time and time again that he called you the hardest working player he had ever coached. And a lot of your teammates had vouched for the same thing. When you hear about all your teammates and your coaches giving you that praise, I know you work for it and you have worked for it, but how satisfying is it to hear that from other players that the hard work you have put in is paying off?
Definitely. it feels good hearing that from other people because it shows that the work doesn't go unnoticed. But for me, it was really for motivational purposes. Like I'll work hard and do everything I got to do, but it's not always about you as a person, as you as a player. It's not always about you. It's about you as a team. So that's one thing I learned as I got older, coming in from my freshman year to my junior year. Like, if you want to have team success, like, you're going to have to show people what it takes to be successful. And that's really me and Jarrell. He was my roommate my freshman year. We came in together. And we got really close. So, like, over the course of 3 years, like, whenever I went to the gym, he went to the gym with me. Like, it started becoming like that. So by the time my junior year came, the year we had the 21 season, all those guys are freshmen. They saw how hard I worked. They saw how hard Jarrell worked. They saw how hard the upperclassmen worked. And then they came in. So you'll see KO in the gym at 12 a.m. in the morning. Cam Parker, Aaron Clark, those guys in the gym late at night trying to put in work because they see what it takes to be successful. So definitely that's what it really was for me. It's about bringing the next person on and showing them, like, you could be really successful. You put the time and effort in.
So a couple of weeks after your season ended, you announced that you were going to explore transfer options as a grad transfer. Let's talk about that. At what point after the season did you start to really consider that I could be a grad transfer and I can really get looked at by some top programs?
That's a tough question. I mean, the whole season I was focused on winning the championship. I wanted to win the championship with Jarrell, Kenan, and those guys. And for me, I consider myself a senior because, like, I came in with Jarrell. Like, that was my right-hand man. Like, we came in together as both Kenan and Sacred Heart. When he transferred in, he redshirted. I was a freshman, and we both graduated together the same year. So I was like, I want to win it with you guys, and whatever happens, happens. So definitely shortly after the season ended and with everything that was going on, I was like, I had a pretty good year. Like, I think I want to play against, like, the best competition. I want to play at a high level and just show, like that I could play at a high level and I could really be successful. And that's really what it was. That's really what it was for me. And I put my name in the portal and the rest is history from there.
Yeah, and I mean, you put your name in the portal. A couple of weeks later, you announce your final list. And I mean, Louisville, Wake Forest, Gonzaga, Georgia, Tennessee, Georgetown, and Boston College. You know, that's certainly a list of hefty competition. What drew you to Tennessee? Obviously, your sister playing here, but what else about it made it feel like home to you?
Definitely Coach Barnes and his staff. Like, they pride themselves on working hard. Like, they pride themselves on being, like, the hardest working team in the country. And for me, I seen them play. I watched them play. It's my last year. Like, I'm not the guy that was the big-time athlete. Like, I'm the guy that just tries to outwork everybody and be a bully. And he has success with a lot of those guys that I saw, P.J. Tucker, Greg Williams, Adam Schofield, all those guys. And I watched how they play, and they played my style of game, just shot a bully ball. And I just felt like it couldn't have been a better fit for me as a person, as a player, to go somewhere and play with good competition, have a good team, and really compete for a national championship.
In your commitment tweet that you had posted when you originally committed, you had posted a graphic of you in a Tennessee jersey, and then you posted a picture of you. You can tell me how old you were when you were at a Tennessee game cheering for your sister. How old were you in that picture?
I was, I think, 8 or 9. I was 9 because it was my sister's first championship. And I was like the little team mascot. Like, I'll go to the locker room. Like, all the players knew me. Coach Pat, she knew me. Like I was always around the team. Like, I loved being there. So it was a great picture to post for that commitment.
Do you have any good stories about Pat Summit?
Well, my sister committed to Tennessee. My mom, so they had the meeting. Pat came to New York. At this time, I was living in New York. And she was telling my mom and my sister about Tennessee. And my mom was like, yeah, so when Nikki gets there, What is it going to be like? So at that point, it was already set in stone that Dickie was going to Tennessee. So that's a funny story. And my mom and Pat Summer really liked each other. They found a lot of similarities about how they grew up, and it was just a perfect place for her to go to.
What is your earliest memory from being around the University of Tennessee and going to games there?
To be honest, I watched the lows and highs. Like I was 6 years old. I went to my first Final Four in Indianapolis. I saw them lost in the first game of the Final Four. Then I saw them later win two back-to-back national championships. So I've seen them, like, the highs and lows. I've seen what the height of college basketball looks like for a Final Four. So I always had the championship vision in mind for myself and something I wanted to compete towards and hopefully win in my college career.
And you had talked about it when you said what drew you to Tennessee. You mentioned Grant Williams, who obviously right now is making a living in the NBA. It almost seems like you're a carbon copy of him. You're both, you know, 6'7", you could say an undersized 5, but you have this inside out game. When you see how Rick Barnes turned him into a 2-time SEC player of the year and a first round pick in the NBA, how much more of that did you think that could very well be you next year?
I mean, there's some similarities between me and Grant. Definitely he was a great player. But one thing about Coach Barnes is, like, he makes you, like, value yourself, like, believe in yourself as a player, so be your own person. So that's one thing that I really appreciate about him. Like, he pushed you to get to new limits and push you to get to the next level as a player. Because everyone's different as a player. There might be some similarities, might be some differences, but you yourself is a unique player. So when I saw him in this summer that we were together, definitely I've seen a lot of growth, and I feel like I have a lot of success here. I can have a lot of success here. I'll continue to do the right things and put the work in.
How much did you talk to Tobias Harris when you were going through your recruitment?
I mean, me and Tobias, we work out together in the summers. So we'll joke around because he went to Tennessee. My sister went to Tennessee. And so when I committed, he reached out to me. I was like, it's time to get to work. And that was about it. We didn't talk that much during the process. He kind of let me enjoy the process with all the schools. He'll support me no matter what. So definitely when I picked Tennessee, I know he felt good about that.
Now, I want to, you know, you may not have an answer to this now, but, you know, going to Tennessee, it's obviously you're going to have more eyes on you. You're going to be a fairly big contributor to next season's team. How do you view your chances of having a chance to play in the NBA?
I mean, as long as there's a chance, it's good enough for me. You know how I am. So definitely that's not my main focus right now, but it's something that every athlete, every college player has a goal in their mind to play at the next level. But in order for me to get there, I got to take care of business at this level. And that's all I got to do. Just focus. We got to win. And I got to do everything. I got to do to the best of my ability.
So we'll close out the interview with just a couple of rapid-fire questions here. So we'll start off, your favorite basketball moment at Sacred Heart?
Favorite basketball moment at Sacred Heart? Definitely the dunk, because I never heard the pit center that loud before.
Okay. Favorite place to play on the road?
Ooh. Favorite. All right, in the NEC of all time that we traveled to.
In your career, non-conference or conference?
I would definitely say Providence. Dunkin' Donuts. We played there twice. Or the Prudential Center, because that was home for me.
Who's a better rebounder, you or your brother?
I'm definitely the better rebounder.
Okay, all right. Because I remember I talked to him after the quarterfinal game, and I said, you know, is he a better rebounder? And even he was like, he's getting there. He's certainly getting there. Yeah. And then I'll close it out. What do you hope to improve the most in your game while you're at Tennessee?
I would say one aspect. I would want to be a complete player. Definitely I want to improve on being more of an inside out threat. And that's the next thing with my development.
Well, EJ, I mean, it's always great to see you, man, and talk to you. And I'm so proud to know you and see where you've become. So thank you for joining me. I'm going to be watching, you know, as many games as I can of Tennessee this year. You know, best of luck, man. And just know that a lot of people at SHU are rooting for you.
I appreciate it. It is my alma mater, so I will hope so.
It is.
On your podcast, I'm really happy. Really happy to see you starting a show, and I'm supporting no matter how I can.
Thank you, EJ. I appreciate it. All right. Take care, buddy.
Yeah. And once again, thanks so much to EJ for joining me on the podcast. There is a little bit more to that story, the sleeping in the pit story that he wanted me to include in the podcast as well. So going to his freshman year, when he was talking about making 20,000 shots in the summer, he had a bit of a competition with Sean Hohen, who, once again, another great player for Sacred Heart and hopefully a future guest on the podcast. They would try and shoot before their 6 a.m. lifts during the summer. So him and Sean would race to the pit to get shots up first. And whoever got there first would get to use the shooting machine first and get shots up and all that kind of thing. So after 2 weeks of them going back and forth, competing to see who would get the shooting machine, that is when EJ decided to start sleeping at the pit. So he had no other excuse not to beat Sean to the pit center. And so he wanted me to include that. And he said, that's how it all started. And then he just kept doing it for the rest of the summer. And if that doesn't tell you how hard a worker he is, I really don't know how else to describe it. But like I said, it's so great to have known him and watch him grow as a player and a person over the past couple of years that I'm going to be tuning into as many Tennessee games as possible to watch him play. Originally, before COVID struck and the college basketball landscape got changed, I know they were supposed to play, I believe it was Gonzaga at Madison Square Garden, and I told him, I said I was going to drop any amount of money to watch him play because I was going to be sitting in the stands like a proud parent, you know, just watching him and knowing that he came from a rotation player at Sacred Heart to being at the world's most famous arena competing for a Power 5 school. It's just great to see how things would come full circle like that. But can't thank him enough. Wishing him all the best. But that'll do it for this edition of the Beyond the Shoebox Score podcast. Once again, another great episode. Next week, we have another great guest as well. His voice is synonymous with Sacred Heart Athletics. He's been doing it for many, many years now. The one and only Randy Brochu joins me on the podcast to talk about so many more things, about his broadcasting career, how he got the shoe, all that great stuff. But until then, until next week, you don't have to wait till next week for that episode. But once again, thanks so much to everybody who has listened, who has given me feedback, comments. I really, really, really do appreciate it. If there's somebody that you want to see on the podcast moving forward, please reach out to me. I welcome everybody. I have a great lineup of guests already lined up for the coming weeks. It's going to be great to see and hear from some of these great Sacred Heart players and coaches and alumni from the school. It's going to be great. The podcast has just taken off. Thanks so much again to everybody who has listened. Until next week, thanks guys for listening.